Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it.
0-2.
Hit deep to left field. Ball game. Christian Walker walks it off, and the Astros win it and take 3 out of 4 from the Seattle Mariners.
That's the one Christian Walker wanted. Let him have it. Enjoy the moment, Christian.
There you go. There you go, Christian Walker. Hey, 3 out of 4.
Walker.
3 out of 4 over the Mariners this weekend. We'll take it as we are in. The store is open on Monday morning here. How you doing, Seth?
I'm good. I'm glad Christian Walker finally sobered up by that ninth inning because he looked drunk as a first baseman early in the game. And ends up having a good series.
Mm-hmm.
Ended up with a 850-plus OPS in this series and batted well over 300. So this is more the Christian Walker we need to see.
Yeah.
And yesterday was fun because the Astros did what they do best. Twice in a row, they left an inning with the bases loaded and no runs scored.
Yep.
It was a really tense. It would be a tense game if the Astros weren't so bad at hitting with the bases loaded. Except because we've seen this over and over and over again. By the time Christian Walker got up there, I'm not going to lie to you, Sean. I had zero confidence. My confidence has been shattered. The only salvation we would have was that the bases at least weren't loaded.
Right.
And ultimately, that was the key to the game.
Was that the
bases were not loaded.
Just had one guy on. That was it. Altuve gets on. Yeah, that's it. You have one guy on. You don't have the bases loaded. It's all good. I was, you know, just watching the game yesterday and really watching this weekend and watching this team. And, you know, look, Joe Espada is going to go down with the ship on Christian Walker, either batting cleanup or fifth in the order. Like, this, everybody wanting Christian Walker to get bumped down to, like, eighth in the order. I get it. He's been, at best, their eighth or ninth best hitter in the lineup this year.
Yeah.
Including
the other guy. I mean, the cleanup spot has just been atrocious for the Astros.
But it's been mostly him.
It's been 75% Christian Walker,
And so they're 28-25 on the season, which in some ways is... I don't want to say miraculous, but they've overcome a lot just to be a game and a half back in what is, I think, once again a pretty mediocre division. But that's fine. This is the format you play. You win the division, you're in the postseason. They got 3 wild card spots too. They can get. Sometimes I just watching the game and watching this team this weekend. Sometimes it's as simple as when your cleanup hitter is better than being your ninth best hitter on your team, you're going to win some baseball games. Like he comes up with a lot of situations where he can drive in runs, and he's not been successful doing, by and large, has not been successful doing so this year. Yesterday, in a big spot, he was, and he had a good weekend. And guess what? Lo and behold, the Astros have a good weekend. You know?
Yes.
So
when they've got runners, it's as simple as that.
Yeah.
He's one of the biggest X factors, obviously, on whether the Astros can be a genuinely contending team or not. And we've just seen so little of it that it's hard. It's hard when it's a guy you don't know.
And yeah.
And it's like, obviously, he's very hard on himself.
Yeah.
But there's no room in my heart for sympathy right now. I don't know you, Christian Walker.
No. And he's going to play. Like, this is, I know that last year, by the middle of the season, they'd sent Jose Abreu down to rookie camp in Florida to try to find his swing, never found it, cut him, whatever. That ain't happening. Christian Walker still at least has some redeeming baseball qualities to him. Yesterday at the end of the game was one of them. Defensively, you know, he's a very good defensive first baseman. Like, Christian Walker ain't going anywhere. So it was great to see that yesterday. You know,
the young left fielder, too. Jose Altuve showing some promise.
Yeah.
Friday he had that nice throw home.
Yeah, they lost the game.
They sent Raleigh, notoriously a slow baseball player, from third because Altuve was fielding the ball in left field.
Yeah.
Altuve said, "No, sir."
Yeah.
"No, sir." And he gunned him down at home. I wish he had done the little...
Six-shooters.
Yeah. Little Bo Jackson deal there.
Altuve. Somewhere Goodell throws a flag on it. So that was the only game they lost this weekend. 3 out of 4. So 10-7 on this stretch. If it feels weird not having any Astros baseball today, it's because you've had baseball for 17 straight days.
You came out of a stretch of 17 straight games. You would lose. How many pitchers did they lose in that stretch?
Two. Wisniewski. I think Wisniewski. One each game. Yeah. Wisniewski and Blanco. I think Wisniewski was during this stretch here.
Wisniewski might have entered injured, and it was kind of, we didn't know exactly what it was, but whatever, officially it happened during this stretch.
Yeah.
So,
he got put on the IL. He got put on the IL during this stretch for sure.
Yeah. And at the beginning of the series, I didn't know exactly how Wisniewski was going to be used, or at the beginning of the stretch. But regardless, I think you come out of it with those injuries to your pitchers and with the offense showing a lot more life. They're not the golden era Astros yet, but over the last month and over the last 30 days, they've been a lot better than they had been. Over the past few weeks, in the month of May, they're doing really well. And I'd love to think that May is just an arbitrary designation, but for whatever reason, last year, various people just turned into pumpkins when they hit June.
Yeah, you're talking.
It's a big stretch here, Sean.
Yeah. Offensively, it's been good. I mean, they're in the upper third in some really important numbers, and I think most importantly, they went 10-7 during that stretch where they are. You go 10-7 during a stretch. So May 6th was the last time Wisniewski pitched in a game, and you're right. That was on a Tuesday. They had that Thursday off, and then May 9th is when this stretch began. So you're right. They came in. I think his elbow soreness, his injury was announced, and he was obviously put on IL during this stretch. And then Blanco, you lose during this stretch, and you just keep your fingers crossed. I get weirdly excited now for these minor league spot starts. Like Colton Gordon and Brandon Walker are battling for permanent spots right now in this rotation. I mean, that's,
and you see the upside in them.
Well,
and with Spencer Arrighetti probably not back until July, right? Is that what Chandler said?
Yes. Hang on, I've got it right here. I thought I did. The Dana Brown said he did a hit on 790. He does a hit on there every week, and he said that somewhere in July before Spencer Arrighetti. Yeah,
Luis Garcia was thrown off a mound in the bullpen at one point this weekend. Yeah. So he's back on whatever schedule he's on.
That would be great if you get back Luis Garcia. You know, if you get Luis Garcia back and he's, you know, 80-85% of what he was before he hurt his elbow, that's a huge boost right there. I'm just not counting on any of these Tommy. You know how I feel about these Tommy John guys. I'm waiting for the Grim Reaper around the corner.
Javier, at the very least, I know it's just as tasking on the arm for a reliever, but at least with Javier, they've used him so flexibly in the past as a reliever or as a starter that he might be the. If those, let's say theoretically, those two guys were ready around the same time, Javier might be the easiest to kind of slip in there. Especially when you get into the playoff type scenario.
Yeah, or maybe you're doing an opener thing with some of these guys to piece it together. You know, Javier comes in, he's going to give you two or three innings out of the chute, and then you've got Gusto ready, or you've got maybe, you know, Luis Garcia morphs. Maybe Luis Garcia is an opener, and Javier comes in, they kind of tag team the thing. I don't know. Man, Joe Espada is going to have a lot on his plate as you head into June, just with all this, with all the moving parts going on. And we haven't mentioned the big thing, is that they've gone through this stretch, they've improved offensively, and the record's gotten a whole lot better with no Yordan Alvarez. And we don't know when this is. I don't know why people keep showing videos of Yordan running the bases.
That's not what's holding him back.
No. Like, I don't. I could give two flips about him running the bases. How's his hand?
Is there some kind of award for courage we can give for the man with the mysterious hand issue is running the bases?
Is there some connection between the two injuries? You know, sometimes you injure something and it affects something else. Like, is his hand injury somehow affecting his ability to run, and this should get me excited? Stop posting videos of him running the bases. I don't care. I want to know how his hand is. So we've got no real end in sight on that one, other than Joe Espada just keeps sort of paying typical Espada optimistic lip service to it, which is, he's doing good. He's getting better.
We thought we might see him this series, so maybe this next one is the sweet spot.
Maybe. We'll see. This now begins a stretch, as we just finished up the 17 games in a row. The stretch that begins now is one where over the next 20-25 games, it ain't all that difficult, man, compared to what they've been playing. Like, the Astros, the schedule eases up a little bit here. I'm looking at it right here. They got the A's for a couple of games. They got the Rays for four games here. over the weekend. So they still have six more home games in this home stretch. Then you go to Pittsburgh. I haven't kind of mapped out the days yet to see if they catch Paul Skeens. If you don't catch Paul Skeens, going to Pittsburgh is no big deal at all.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I'll tell you one thing, Sean. Paredes in that minor league ballpark versus the Rays, his old team. Like, that was fun.
Yeah.
But in Minute Maid Park, same pitchers. That could be a hell of a Paredes show.
Yes, absolutely.
Hell of a, I'm not going to do it. No, I'm not going to do a parade. I'm not going to do a parade pun.
Don't.
Yeah, especially on Memorial Day.
No, man.
Not going to do it. Nope.
Respect our vets.
For America right
yes,
there.
Yes, respect America. At Cleveland after that. Then the White Sox, Minnesota comes here. I mean, Cleveland and Minnesota are playoff teams right now if the season ended today. At least they were a couple days ago. So those are decent teams. Then they're at the A's in their minor league ballpark for four games. Then they're at the Angels for three games. Like that's all the way up to June 22nd. I mean, I just rattled off seven or eight teams, and two of them are in the playoffs right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the season ended today, and they're wild card teams, they're not even division leaders. So this is you get Yordan back here. Some of these younger guys start to figure things out. You get it, you know, Lance starts to improve a little bit. This is a fun stretch right here.
No, Sean, we buried the lead too.
What?
I mean, Altuve, basically, were wondering. We took Altuve out of the circle of trust on Wednesday, and he has responded full force.
Do we need to do an emergency circle of trust to get Altuve back in? We've never done one before. Okay.
Too early in the season. Okay. You look like an amateur. You just start pulling that crap.
Just spitballing it. Yeah.
No, I think that in Jake Myers, it might have really been the prod that
he's still hitting.
Kept him going the way he is.
Yeah. Now,
Myers is going to be a big one for you next week.
Yes.
Because we're still not past the point last year where everything kind of fell apart for him.
Yeah.
His numbers are still about the same as they were last year this
time. I'll be gone for the first few days of June. I'll get back on June 4th. So at what point in the circle, at what point do we do the next circle of trust, do you think? I'm going to need more than 3 days worth of June to trust Jake. Just do we want to do like the following Monday? We want to give him like a week or something like that?
Unless they go on a huge tear or something.
Okay, we'll play it by ear.
Devastating collapse, whichever it might be.
Yeah, we'll play it by ear. Ocho's up early with us here. He says, Sean, there's no such thing as an easy opponent with this offense. That's fair. They play a lot of games. But empirically, Ocho, these are far less difficult teams in a long stretch than what they've been playing. They've had one of the harder schedules in baseball so far. 28-25, a game and a half out. Given everything that's gone on with this team, I'll take it right now, especially where they were a year ago at this time. All right, we're off and running here. We're in live today, man. We're in live on Memorial Day. Big thanks to all the troops. Certainly thoughts and prayers to everybody who has made the biggest sacrifice to let us do stuff like this every day, and the families of them as well. So we are in today for you. If you're up with us, send us a text. Let us know you're up with us here on this Monday Memorial Day holiday. All right, up next, we got a bit of a mystery solved by Jonathan Alexander. We talked quite a bit last week about the trade that the Texans tried to execute with the Patriots to move up to 38. We were speculating as to who they might have been trying to get. Jonathan Alexander had a report this weekend, and he reported exactly who they were targeting with that trade. We will get to that coming up next. Indeed, yes. Big thanks for sure. Hey, Sean and Seth, Gary and Schulenberg with you on this early Memorial Day morning. Thanks for going live today. You're welcome. If you're up with us, text us, 713-572-4610. We appreciate you getting up with us today. We got a lot to get to on the show, 713-572-4610. So we talked, Seth, about this trade or potential trade last week. If you missed it, the New England Patriots are doing their own version of kind of what the Texans did with Iron Sharpens Iron, like an internal documentary that gives you just this immersive experience of the hire of Mike Vrabel, the draft process, signing free agents, the war room on draft day. And it was quite clear in their documentary that there were a couple teams trying to trade up to the 38th overall pick in the draft. That was the Patriots' second-round pick. And one of those teams was the Houston Texans. And you could tell just from the conversation, it was the Texans and the Bears that were trying to move up to 38. The Bears were at 39. They were trying to move up one spot. The Texans were trying to move up 20 spots from 58 to 38, and they were offering a couple of third-round picks, one this year and one next year, to do that. Ultimately, the deal didn't come together. We were speculating last week as to who the Texans might have been targeting with that pick, or with that trade, I should say. because the Patriots ended up taking Trevion Henderson, the running back out of Ohio State. Very good player. Jonathan Alexander pulled the curtain back on this, Seth. You and I, it was kind of a fun segment because we were just sort of speculating about what if they were trying to trade up to get Trevion Henderson? What would that have looked like?
We know, yeah, all the guys that were there that were no longer there. Yeah, how in the 10 spots between the Patriots pick there and then when the Texans ultimately drafted Ursary, who were the potential guys that maybe they were targeting?
Yeah, yeah. They ultimately traded a third round pick to move up 10 spots to 48 from 58 to take Arianti Ursary. Jonathan Alexander pulled the curtain back in his article. He had a long article about Ursary this week, and it's really good. Just it tells his whole background and his story into football, and it's very compelling. He said this, Seth: the Texans, who brought Ursary in for a top 30 visit during the draft process, liked him so much, they actually tried to trade up from 58 to 38 with the New England Patriots to get him. Two sources with knowledge of the Texans' draft process told the Chronicle. A projected late first-round, early second-round pick, the Texans' front office thought there was a chance someone could take him early in the second round. So they had already moved back from the first into the early second, taking Jaden Higgins at 34.
Yeah.
Then when 38 is sitting there, they're on the phone with the Patriots trying to move up to get Ursary. Sometimes the best trades are the ones you don't make. They only ended up having to give up one third-round pick to move up 10 spots to get him several minutes later.
So they save a third-round pick, and you could look at this as either the optimist or the pessimist. The optimist would say, hey, they got the guy they wanted anyway, and it didn't end up costing as much as they would have spent. But you could also immediately say, what the hell were they even thinking? What were the hell they even thinking trying to get up to 38 to get a guy that was going to be there at 48?
Yeah, it's a guessing game, man.
I know, yeah. I tend to be more on the optimist side of things. I very much give teams excuses because it is all such a crapshoot in so many ways that there's no guarantee that he would have been there 10 spots later. So that worked out. It does make me feel better in that, okay, this is a guy they felt really good about. Mm-hmm. Maybe they have a higher assessment on him than a lot of other teams, but that's where we get to watch over the next couple of years.
Yeah.
Maybe this year. Hopefully. We'll see. Ursary, rookie of the year. There you go.
That would be sweet.
Washes away everything that happened with Kenyon Green. Those were some trade day. You know, you wonder, okay, what might have been if a trade had or had not worked out.
Yeah.
A few years ago, if they didn't have a good offer to move back, would they have taken Kenyon Green or Kyle Hamilton?
Right.
With that selection, I don't know.
Yeah, tough to think about. I think the other thing with this trade is that the pick they ended up trading to the Raiders, because Raiders had 48. That's who they traded with to move up to get Ursary. The third round pick they actually gave up to move up there was one that was in the 90s somewhere. It wasn't the 79th overall pick that they were going to give up in this draft with the Patriots trade. The Patriots trade, they would have been moving up 20 spots. They would have been giving up 79 and a third next year. The 79th pick was the pick they used to get Jalen Knoll, who has been, you know, again, he hasn't played a single snap in the NFL yet, so I'm not going to get too out over my skis over this, but he has been widely lauded as the best pick they had in this draft in terms of where they got him and what his talent level is. There's a sort of a Tank Dell feel to it where this guy, you know, he's the measurables aren't there, but we know the talent is there and he definitely fills a role and he can play on special teams too for returning punts and stuff like that. I'm not going to say Jalen Knoll wouldn't have been on the team if they'd made that deal with the Patriots. Maybe they moved back up. You know, they still would have had another couple third round picks to play with there, you know, to move up and potentially get him. But you know, they have him now, like for sure. Like that was the pick. You would have given up the pick that you used to get Jalen Knoll. If you were going to still try to get Jalen Knoll on this team, you would have had some work to do. You would have needed two to tango to get him on this team.
Yeah, and I guess theoretically the other interesting part of it would have been, let's say if it wasn't actually Ursary they were going after, Luther Burden III was still there. He went, you know, he ended up going 39th.
I mean
they ended up taking Jalen Knoll in this draft even after having drafted your first selection a wide receiver. Would they have been as bold as that? I don't think they would have for Burden.
Two receivers within five picks of each other early in the second round would have been a big move. That would have been exciting.
Aggressively,
that would have been super exciting because The most interesting thing about that, Seth, other than just massive moves to get wide receivers, obviously the message that would have been sent was, man, they are trying to put C.J. Stroud in a real position to succeed. And I think the picks that they ended up making send that message anyways. That would have been a really forceful message of that. The other interesting thing about that would have been that Luther Burden III reportedly comes with a little extra, you know, like his inner circle. And so that would have been... It would have been interesting to see, you know, we probably would have asked Nick Caserio about it on this show. He probably would have gotten asked about it in the press conference. He's the one whose girlfriend was his manager. Yeah.
Yeah. That part of it. I don't mind as much hearing that the mother is the manager or something. I mean, that's worked out pretty damn well for Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
But the girlfriend part of it, that scares the hell out of me.
I need to know how long they've been dating.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Is this a Jennifer Hudson type situation?
Jordan Hudson. Jordan.
Her too. She hasn't escaped my scrutiny, Sean. Jennifer Hudson. You be a head on a swivel, Jennifer Hudson. No, I'm doing some digging.
You dragged Jennifer into it a couple times last week, and the text page was really funny because they're like, Jennifer Hudson would make this Belichick thing super interesting.
It would be. Oh, yeah. Hell yeah.
You need to talk this into existence.
I think she's married. So I don't want to look. He's no Belichick. Maybe
Belichick.
Okay, he allegedly was a home record back when he was with the Giants, but that's neither here nor there.
She's allegedly married Belichick. Like, okay,
just looking for an edge, you know, just looking.
This is a this Ursary story is good by Jonathan Alexander, basketball kid who the football coach at his high school kind of stumbled upon in the weight room. Like,
well,
hey,
he was a 6 foot. Two 220-pound freshman who's just sitting on a bench in the weight room, and the football coach
walks through.
The rule for the football players is no sitting down during the workout. So he's like, "What the hell's your deal?" That's not how he said it. That's how I envision it. And I don't know, Ariante Ursary. He's 6'6". Would he have had a future in basketball? I think it would have been it involved a lot of battling with a buffet. So I think he probably made the right choice.
He got good advice, man. He got good advice to go into football, obviously. So good article. Go out of your way to find it. Jonathan does a nice job there. So, yeah, they were definitely, according to two sources, looking to move up to get Ariante Ursary. Kamari Lassiter, little video that dropped yesterday. This is just stuff you do on Memorial Day. Like, this video dropped of Kamari Lassiter, and it got me excited about training camp and excited about this defense. This was Kamari Lassiter doing a little sit-down with the Texans social media team, talking about the Texans' D-line in the win over the Chargers in the playoffs.
Man, we got a D-line full of savages. Interior, edge rushers, they are just straight savages, just hungry, just ready to go.
Here comes Will, the Terminator, with a sack on Herbert.
When Will got to the quarterback, that was lit. When Nico got to the quarterback, that was super lit. You hear the celebration, you're like, ha! Ah. He was like masked up, going crazy, and I'm like, oh yeah. And Rio got a sack.
Again, Mario gets back there. They blast Herbert for another sack. Back to back.
He started doing his little, got on bait dance. That was lit too. Playing with a D-line like that just makes my life so much easier and fun, just because I know I'm not gonna have to cover for too long. It's like working hand and foot. Like, man, it's just fun.
Hand and foot. Never heard that before. Hand and glove, I've heard. Hand and foot, never heard before. But I'll take it.
Yeah, and I think that, for one thing, I'm impressed that he remembered all the individual sacks.
Yes.
I told you, Sean, good cornerbacks are, they're kind of like pitchers in how pitchers can remember a sequence of pitches so well. Like, so many cornerbacks can just go back through an entire game. And you know, they don't have to go. They don't have to act like Sean McVay, like you're some pretty little show pony or something, and let the masses know how brilliant you are.
Party tricks, yes.
Yeah. So I like that. I like that he remembers their celebration.
I in watching that, the one thing that jumped out at me, I'm like, oh yeah, the one guy that when we talk about this defensive line and all the guys they brought back, all the guys that are here already. I always forget that DeNico Autry is on this team. I don't know what it is. You know, I'm guessing the blind spot comes from he missed so much of last year with the suspensions.
Yeah.
He was banged up a little bit. He didn't play to the level that I think they wanted him to play for what they're paying him until that game against the Chargers, and he just, I forget who their right guard was, but he murdered that poor kid a couple of times in that game. I've forgotten about Denico Autry, man. Denico Autry, X factor for me.
Well, no, and I guess that's the one room where they have a lot of guys who are impactful players, but who are also well into their 30s. Mm-hmm. They have a bunch of old men in that room.
Yep.
And I think at some point, whether it's Derek Barnett or Denico Autry or whomever else, you're just going to have some injuries along the way.
Yeah.
Which is fine because they rotate so much.
Yep.
Derek Barnett got some love in a what was that list?
It was NFL.com. It was NFL.com had the most underappreciated players.
Yeah.
For each team, they had one. They, you know, it was one of these things. They do one for each team, and Derek Barnett, and maybe this is a sign that he's underappreciated. These articles, I like to just my own little exercise, Seth. I write down like three or four names before I page down to the Texans to see if I can guess. You know, at least guess the get it in the group. I didn't have Derek Barnett on my list that I had jotted down, so maybe he is underappreciated.
You were the epitome. Remember, we accidentally left him out of the circle of trust after he had a
dude.
Strip
I forgot
sack
about
for a touchdown.
That. Yes,
yeah,
I did.
And then he did it later again. He did it again later in the season.
He did.
And we remember to put him in the circle of trust. But yeah, I think that's great evidence that he's underappreciated by virtue of us having forgot him when he made one of the best plays all season. We left him out of the circle of trust.
Yeah, yeah. I had completely forgotten about that. Yeah, no, circle of swarm. Circle of swarm.
Yeah, circle of swarm.
Circle of swarm.
Circle of swarm is more short-sighted than the circle of trust. I was reflecting on this weekend, Sean. It was one of my many meditations as I was up in the woods.
What'd you learn?
With circle of swarm, it's almost a big part of it is almost an award for the previous week's game.
Yeah.
It's almost like getting a star on your helmet.
Mm-hmm.
Circle of trust with the Astros,
big picture.
That's more about what the word means. Like, okay, it's not just what you've done lately. It's do I trust that this is going to continue?
Yeah. And we had listeners kind of conflating the two last week with the circle of trust. They're like, hey, man.
That's true. Yeah.
Myers is batting .306 this month. Yeah, I know. It's trust. Do I trust that he's going to keep doing that? You're right.
Not enough people carry around our embossed book of the Circle of Trust and Circle of Swarm rules.
Yeah.
Which you can get on my Shopify for $35.
Right. Go and buy it. Yeah.
0.1% of proceeds go to a very good cause.
Just trust us.
Don't
on
ask
that.
Which cause. Just
trust.
A good cause.
Just trust us on that. You can get it in PDF form or hard copy, whichever.
It's pop up also.
Pop up. Yep. Yep.
Just watch out on page 3. Scary monster jumps out. It's Jose Abreu.
I used to love pop-up books.
Pop-up books are good until when they try to get too cute with them, where you have the little moving parts and everything.
Yeah.
Those last about, what, 3 months with any given toddler?
3 months,
before it's all torn up and everything.
Well, you lived with some gentle toddlers, man. 3 months.
You get there's masking tape and scotch tape holding some of the things
100%,
together.
100%. So there you go. Yeah, Derek Barnett, underappreciated. It is confirmed. He was underappreciated by me, confirmed by NFL.com. He is underappreciated.
He's so underappreciated that there are articles written about how he is unappreciated. Just like the offensive lineman last week acted like, oh,
dude,
finally we get an award for never wanting recognition. We're so special because we never look for recognition, but finally we have an award to recognize the fact that we don't want recognition. Go die, you fat bastard.
I knew you were going to kill Andrew Whitworth for that. I read that. Andrew Whitworth, for those who missed it, the NFL is going to be awarding the top offensive lineman the Protector of the Year award next year, which is fine.
Yeah.
That's great. Deion Dawkins and Andrew Whitworth. Deion Dawkins, current lineman for the Bills. Andrew Whitworth, retired lineman for a couple of teams, were both the catalysts of this award. And they were taking the biggest victory lap for two people who came up with an award. Deion Dawkins said that they made history by coming up with this award.
They did. It's like I think they ended the Vietnam War too. That's they were like baby boomers in their ability to really laud themselves for making all these drastic changes and what have you.
Made history.
We fought the man and we shut it down.
Andrew Whitworth.
Once we started getting drafted, for sure, that's when we got into it.
For the guys who don't ever ask for any credit, we came up with an award.
Yeah.
All right. Good for them, though. Good for them. Payne and Pendergast. with you on a Memorial Day Monday. If you're up with us, text us, 713-572-4610. Mr. Optimistic is up with us today. Thank you, Mr. Optimistic, for being up with us. Good morning, guys. Appreciate you doing the show this morning. I listen every day. We appreciate you as well. Texter 0303 on the text page. Astros, 3 out of 4 over the weekend. We'll hit that in headlines. We'll touch on the NBA playoffs as well. And we've got Acknowledge Me coming up at 720 as well on the show today. Stay there. You're listening to Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
0-2.
Hit deep to left field. Ball game. Christian Walker walks it off, and the Astros win it and take 3 out of 4 from the Seattle Mariners.
That's the one Christian Walker wanted. Let him have it. Enjoy the moment, Christian.
I feel like every single one, certainly of Isak Paredes' home runs, it feels this way, and certainly that home run by Christian Walker to walk it off against the Mariners yesterday. Astros win 5-3. That was bottom of the ninth. After leaving the bases loaded a couple of innings, each inning, a couple of innings before, the Astros left guys on base all day yesterday. The first 4 innings, they had a runner on second, if not first and second, each of the first 3 or 4 innings in that game. They were leaving guys on base left and right, but they got it at the right time. Christian Walker, after Altuve gets on to start the ninth inning, Christian Walker hits the walk-off home run. That walk-off, Seth, was a classic. This is why they traded for Paredes. This is why they signed Walker. Swing. Both of those guys have extreme pull tendencies.
Yeah.
And they've both hit, like, Paredes especially. Walker, I haven't kept track of his 5 or 6 home runs as closely. But that one was like 3 rows into the Crawford boxes. That was like his tailor-made swing and pull for that ballpark yesterday.
His, and he does have a little bit of the, you know, the stat nerd excuses of he's had a little bit of bad luck. His expected slugging is in the high 400s. He's been hitting the ball harder on average than he has in the past in his career. So a little bit of it's bad luck, but obviously the strikeouts have been the strikeouts.
He either hits the ball hard or he doesn't hit the ball at all.
Right, yeah. I mean, you just can't ignore some of it. And there were some bad... He has some really bad and out, like the poorly timed strikeouts. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, it was in one of the innings they loaded the bases. He had that he real hard hit that the shortstop just couldn't handle.
Yeah.
At second base, and he ends up getting on base for what could have been a fielder's choice, but or a double play. That part of it is promising, and I'd be very, very surprised, as I've said all along, if he ends. It would be a huge shock if he finished the season batting less than 200. There's more of this in him, obviously.
Yeah. He's one. We're starting to get a little deep in the season to where he's probably not going to get, you know, into the 260s or 270s or anything like that. But if he's, you know, to me, it's just if he comes up, I don't care what the batting average is or even the OPS. I mean, I care about the OPS because that's a bigger indicator. He's got to come up bigger in these situations with guys getting on base. The Astros have been getting a ton of guys on base.
And they're just stranding them.
Yeah.
And he's doing nothing for them.
Yeah.
Just leaving them out there, twiddling their fingers.
Yep. So
damn it.
So go figure. When your cleanup hitter is batting like he belongs in the cleanup spot, your team has a little bit of success. That's cool.
Cam Smith in the month of May, hitting 322 with an OPS of 801.
Yeah, man.
He is an above-average baseball player.
He had a big double yesterday. They're coming up with, I mean, by and large, through this stretch here, they went 10-7 over these 17 consecutive games, which is fine. Like, you extrapolate that out over 162-game season, that's like a 95-win baseball team. You know, that you take that. With no rest, you had no rest, and you had 2 of your starting pitchers lost due to elbow injuries during that 17 games. I mean, they were piecing it together. I think you got to give Espada made some strange decisions with the pitching staff during this stretch here. I think pitching Hunter Brown when he did, so that he was unavailable for this series was an interesting decision. I think in this particular series, Espada got fortunate yesterday that the bullpen was able to kind of hold it down on the back end because he pitched Hader on Friday. He brought Hader in with them down by 2 runs. You know, Abreu had coughed up the lead on Friday, and the Astros are trailing 5-3. And I'm assuming he brought in Hader because Hader, he does this sometimes. He hasn't pitched in a few days, so you're trying to keep him sharp. But because he did that, He came in the next day and saved the 2-1 game on Saturday that Fromber pitched, but he was unavailable yesterday, and you're in a dogfight. You know, you're in a tie game in the ninth inning. But I'm leading up to actually giving Espada a compliment, which is it's not easy to juggle this, to juggle a pitching staff during 17 straight games, period.
It's, when you've got multiple starters going four innings, especially.
It's hard to do when everybody's healthy. Yeah. He's doing it with losing 2/5 of his starting rotation.
Yeah.
Likely to Tommy John surgery here in the middle of this. So I give him a little credit for that. You know, in fact, Ben, I don't have him on. Can I acknowledge him for this right now? Joe Espada?
Acknowledge me.
Joe Espada right there. There you go, Joe. Here's Joe Espada talking about Christian Walker.
Yeah, it feels good for sure. It's nice
to
execute.
Wait, hang on. That's Christian Walker. No. You have the right one, Ben. It's not Espada. This is Christian Walker after the game talking about his walk-off. My bad.
Yeah, it feels good for sure. It's nice to execute in a big moment. It's nice to come through for the guys. This lineup's been picking each other up all year, so I feel like you're earning your keep a little bit, winning a big series at home. Good crowd today. The whole thing was enjoyable for sure.
That was a laser. Were you kind of looking for that pitch, or how did you just kind of approach that at bat?
Yeah, his motion, his leg kick, his arm swing, it was all real quick. Threw 2-4 seams pretty much right by me there. And I just wanted to make sure I did everything I could to get my foot in the ground and be ready to get on another fastball. Not really cheating or guessing, but no reason to go spin there based on how the first two look. So shortened my leg kick down a little bit, just stuck my toe in the dirt and tried to get a good swing off.
I love that. I love that bit of analysis.
That's exactly that veteran at the plate approach, just understanding that he's probably going to get a fastball and let's be ready for it.
Yeah.
It sounds so much better after a walk-off compared to, say, a strikeout.
That situation, yeah. So good job, Christian Walker. Good job, Stros. Off today, well-earned day off today here on Memorial Day for the Astros. They're back at it with the A's at home. They've got 2 against the A's, 4 against the Rays this week starting on Tuesday. All right, NBA playoffs, both 2-1 now. Western Conference Finals Saturday. None of those games have been close. The series is close. It's 2-1, Oklahoma City. The Timberwolves won by 42. 143-101, I think, was the final score. I just know they won by more than 40 points on Saturday. So they're now down 2-1. They're back at it tonight. Last night's game, Seth, between the Knicks and the Pacers, this is the more interesting of the two series to me, just because of the vitriol and the Knicks are involved. And
I was done after the first half.
Yeah.
I thought, okay, the Pacers. I was done before the end of the first half.
Yeah.
They were up by 20 plus for a good chunk. Yeah. Like, all right, good. I'm just gonna finish up, go to bed, and trust that the Knicks will be in a world of pain in the morning.
And hoping that they'd be in a world of pain, because I was I wanted them to get swept so bad. As you can tell, if you're just waking up and you didn't know the final score, if you did what Seth did and just shut it down at halftime of that game, the Knicks won that game. They came back in the second half. They were down. They outscored the Pacers 36-20 in the fourth quarter. They were down 10 going into the fourth. As Seth mentioned, they were down 20 in the second quarter. This has been a wild playoff for big comebacks, whether it's comebacks towards the end of games like the Pacers have had 3 different times. The Knicks have now come back from down 20. That's at least 3 that I can remember. They had 2 against the Celtics in games 1 and 2 of that series. And I think the interesting thing is they've been doing it on the road. You know, they did it against the Celtics in Boston for a couple of games, and they do it against the Pacers last night. So now we got a series on our hands now in this one.
We got a series on our hands.
Yep.
Could end up being like the 2019 World Series where no home team ends up winning a game.
That would be
fun. That would still favor the Pacers in
that.
Since we both want the Knicks fan base mostly to just have to wallow in all
miserable.
This misery.
Yes.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting. Rick Carlisle gave kind of an old school excuse, or I guess just it feels like a generalization that a sports host might say or something. But Carlisle basically sounded like, man, things were getting kind of crazy and intense in that home environment, and we just lost our focus.
Yeah.
Not his words exactly, but you got to handle that kind of pandemonium. And, they were they were asking, why weren't you attacking Brunson more, this, that, the other. I think that you're up by 20, and if you just keep your head and play your basketball.
Just play your game.
That's what you're planning on doing. Brunson will present his own opportunities if we can just actually shoot the damn ball.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely. So, we got a series on our hands now. 106-100, the Knicks win that game. Yeah, Charles Barkley buried them at halftime because they're down 13, the Knicks are, and he's like, they're going to have to play up-tempo, and they don't play up-tempo really well. I don't know if that's actually factual analysis by Charles or if it's just him observing what he's seen in the series so far. But there were a lot of people. I saw tweets from people about this game, and I had to look at the timestamp to make sure I was right. There were people tweeting like, man, Knicks down 0-3. Didn't see that coming, stuff like that. I'm like, hold, this is after the game I'm seeing these tweets.
Yeah, you're a little confused.
I'm like, hang on a second. I thought I saw the final score that they won that game, and I'm looking at the timestamp. I'm like, no, these were people that were, when they were down 20 in the second quarter, they're like, series over. Game over. Credit the Knicks, man. They came back in this one. All right, so those are your headlines from a Memorial Day weekend. Let's circle back to the Astros. We'll dig back into this weekend against the Mariners. In retrospect, I think it's going to be looked back at as a huge series for this team. And did the Astros dodge a bullet in the offseason? Did they dodge a bullet in the offseason? We will get to that coming up next.